to episode 62 of the Group Answers Podcast. I'm Brian Daniel here with Chris Surratt.
What's going on?
Another summer edition of the show, Chris.
I love summer. We talked about it a lot in the last one, but it's just hot. It's, well, at least where we are in Nashville. Our guests, probably not as much, but it's hot. It's fun. Baseball, swimming, it's all good.
Executive Pastor Steve Gladen, Saddleback Church, is with us today. Steve, how are you?
Well, I mean, thanks for the promotion. I'm not quite the executive pastor, but I'll let our executive pastor know he's been a coup has happened.
Well, you're the executive pastor of small groups.
Is that what I said?
Brian just left off the second part.
Oh, see, you got to watch me.
Actually, just you know, what do we do?
I'm always trying to give Steve more. I told you that. I said, get him on the show. I'm going to make him something he's not.
Well, this is like the third time Steve's been on the show, which it may be a record.
He is the Steve Martin of the Group Answers show.
There you go.
Right? Does Steve have the record for SNL host?
Yep.
So, or at least moving that way.
Oh. Okay. We'll see. We'll see. I'm not sure what that reference is. I'm so young. So we'll just play it out.
So, Chris, you want to give the fullest introduction of Steve here?
Yeah. I mean, I think most people probably listening to this know of Steve, but Steve Gladen has been the executive pastor of small groups at Saddleback Church since 1998 and serves as an elder of the church. He oversees the strategic launch and spiritual development of more than, get this, 7,000 adult small groups on multiple campuses. He's the author of Small Groups with Purpose, which has been translated into 11 languages. Can you read all of those, Steve?
Sure he can.
I'm praying that they're translated in the right way that I hope they are.
And leading Small Groups with Purpose, and he has a brand new book coming out, actually, and by the time you listen to this, it may actually be out, but Planning Small Groups with Purpose. So we're excited to have Steve on. He lives in beautiful Orange County, California, with his wife and two kids, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much. It is a balmy mid-70s here and zero humidity, so I mean, it's just like, it's painful.
It's like 98 degrees with about 120% humidity in Nashville, but that's okay. That's okay.
That's right. So the bio says two kids, but Erica is not with you this summer, right? Is she back in Orange County or is she out and about?
No, she just came back. She was doing a study abroad down in San Diego, Chile. And so she's home, and we are grateful for that. It was a great 4 months and for her. And so she's doing that. My son Ethan is... he's got about a couple more days of his junior year in high school, so looking forward to our full summer.
Wow, and we love having Erica in her second home in Nashville, because that's where all good things happen.
Is.
But let me ask you this.
She loves it, too.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, she likes the cold. Can you believe that? She likes the snow and the cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least it's not like Boston, where my daughter wanted to go to college. It's like,
no,
you have no idea. No idea. You know, Steve, on the last podcast, we actually, Brian and I talked about summer with small groups and how devastating it can be if you don't handle it the right way. And this wasn't on the pre-planned questions, but I'd love to hear just your take on how do you get through summer with your small group and not have it die?
Yeah, it's, well, and again, it all goes on, you know, how your small groups are formed. At Saddleback, we form them on friends. So the beautiful thing about friends is when you start groups organically through friendships, and obviously that leads to a whole different question of, you know, how do you handle evangelism? But when you start groups as friends, summer is just like fall or spring or, you know, any other season. Different seasons in life bring different things. When our kids were younger, summer we got, you know, the most studies we've ever wanted to get done because every day was a Friday because there was no homework in summer for the kids, and the sports leagues were almost non-existent. So summer was actually for younger family with our small group, it was just like beautiful. Older does make it a little bit easier, and we're able to do a lot of different things, but we're also a lot more mobile, and so serving and evangelism can take a stronger role. But the bottom line is that, you know, when you're starting groups by friendship through an organic means, you just go, you look at your friendships. Your friendships aren't affected by summer. You may have more time to play and do things outside of your regular group time, but, you know, you're, it's just like your marriage and your family system. Your family has different rhythms, but you're still a family and you still stay together. And so you still enjoy being with each other. So it's not a problem to meet and hang out. And so you have, you know, different aspects of group, but it's all a matter of just saying, what is health in a small group? And how do I use each season to take advantage of the different aspects of building health in a small group?
That's good.
Yeah, that's really good. Chris, that reminds me of what you said in episode 61. You said you don't take breaks from your friendships and relationships in summer.
So why would you do that with your group? And I think what you said is key is having an ultimate goal for the groups. What is the goal, which is health? So looking at that, each season can bring a different aspect of health to the group. And for me, summer can bring a lot of fun because we get fun out of the group, sometimes too much when it comes to, like, you know, doing the Bible study and every week. And you can put the fun back in for summer. So that's good.
Yeah, not to belabor the point, but, you know, on episode 61, we talked a lot about being intentional with summer and its uniqueness, but we didn't maybe acknowledge the uniqueness of the other seasons or in times of the year.
That's true.
Yeah, it's really true. And it depends on the family, you know, where you're at, what stage of life you're in, what is the context of, you know, your climate. You know, California is a very outdoor climate almost year round. But if you're not that way, yeah, there's many different things. You just have to be strategic with the culture that you're in, the seasons you're in, and the stage of life that you're in, and help them figure it out.
True. You did just rub it in again that you live in paradise. So why would people vacation away?
He does that, though.
From Southern California.
Steve Gladen does that.
That's all right.
It is purely an accident. Purely an accident.
Hey, I want to talk about the book. I'm so excited about it. I got to pre-read it a few months ago. It's a great book, Planning Small Groups with Purpose. And at this point, it's been released. But I'm curious on your take. Why write another book on small groups? This will be your third book on small groups. So why write another one?
Yeah, I mean, very fair question because sometimes it can feel saturated out there. But one of the things that I noticed in talking with churches is that most people don't have a strategic plan in place. And so the book is, in essence, helping, you know, if you have a small group ministry church, it helps you build a strategic plan that you can put in place for, you know, 12 to 18 months and revisit the book and go through it. And literally, I walk through 20 questions that I had to answer throughout the 30 plus years I've been in small groups. So it's like, in essence, you're building out your playbook and then figuring out, okay, what game is in front of us and what plays do we want to run? But really the thing that pains me the most in talking with churches is that most church systems are not aligned. And so 40% of the book is actually dealing with the overall church and how to get your church and the foundation of your church set biblically. And then the 20 questions play out from that to say, okay, once my church is in harmony, is in alignment, how do I take it to that next level of being able to then build my small group ministry to be healthy when it's complementing what the church is already doing?
That's good. And you cover a lot of that through your Accelerate gatherings as well. You guys kind of work through the principles of the book with teams.
Yeah, it is literally almost, you know, it's our Accelerate conference in a book form, because obviously not everyone can fly to any one of our Accelerates. But, you know, it's a way for them to get a jump start. And obviously the 2-day or 3-day intensive workshop we do gives a little bit, you know, it forces them, because so often you have to get away from the church to think about the church. And so that's the advantage of coming to the Accelerate conferences or workshops or whatever we call them. I should know what we call them, but I don't. But, you know, it's one of those things where each one plays a different environment, but the whole impetus of the book was to say too many small group point people do not have a plan in place, do not have goals set, do not have, you know, they don't challenge themselves to dream. And really, the very after every question, there's a dream component. There is identifying obstacles. It's putting a SMART goal in place. And then it's, you know, how are we going to follow up on it? And so from that, we're developing some communities of purpose that will be available on the smallgroupnetwork.com site, where you can get into a community of purpose. And really, it's just an accountability group to make sure you do what you said you were going to do. Because like most of us, the plans are not the hard part, or the discovery process is not the hard part. It's the implementation part. And I hate to tell this to people who are listening, but everything eventually distills down into this four-letter word called work. And so you've got to get down in the weeds and make it happen. So it's I think it's a great book to help take a lot of theory and take it into practice, but also more importantly, it'll force you to do a hard look at your church and say, are we in alignment? And are we in alignment with our senior leader?
Steve, obviously there are as many ways almost as doing church as there are churches, but certainly there's not a one size fits all. But there are some things, that we know work, and some things that all successful ministries have in common. So, you know, to the extent that you would write a book that people should read, it should be said that Saddleback, where you are pastor of small groups, now has over 7,000 small groups that reach over 100% of the attendees, which are two staggering numbers, honestly. I mean, obviously, just the sheer number of groups, but that over 1,000% of attendees, and I know how you do it, because you're active in the communities, and you've got real active coaches and infrastructure, and you've got the huddles. You've just got a nice system in place for making group life available, and then you've got a leadership structure and engine that takes advantage of that. So I just wanted and was curious, and I would love for our listeners to know about, you know, honestly, this is not something that you did in 18 months, but what did it take?
Oh, no, I mean.
Yeah. So what did it take to build such an effective, reproducible system like the one currently at Saddleback? I mean, what are some of those things that anyone could put into play and that could be gleaned from the book?
Well, I mean, the beautiful thing, and I'm glad you brought that up, because, you know, whenever I'm talking to at a conference, I always say, you know, when God chose to build a mushroom, he did it in 6 hours. When he chose to build an oak tree, he did it in 60 years. And part of what, you know, you got to understand is you can't microwave community. You can't microwave a small group ministry. I can't teach you how to do it quickly, but I can teach you the components that you will play out over time. And no doubt, we've been doing it for 20 years. I mean, you know, when the day I started at Saddleback, you know, just a little over 20 years ago, and to today, it's night and day difference. But part of it is you as the point person, you know, have to dream and go, you know, God, what do you want to do in our church? How do you want to see it play out? And I wouldn't label myself as a high visionary, but you've got to be able to you know, lean in and say, you know, God, what do you want to do at this church? But, you know, and then you got to, you know, two of the foundational things is you got to have tenacity. I mean, you have got, it is, you know, the early years were hand-to-hand combat, and you're just like going, come on, God, give me some type of weapon. And so, I mean, you were just in the trenches, and some days you didn't know if you were going to survive or not. But you have to have tenacity, because, and really what that boils down to, the churchy term, is calling. Because when your calling is set, you know that in the good days and in the bad days, you are called to that place, that you love that place. It's, and again, we talk about the Bible as a family system, and it's true. I mean, you know, you look at your marriage, I mean, other than the three of our marriages, there are good days and there's bad days. And, you know, you've got to have the tenacity to say, hey, I am called to this person. I am ready just to, I'm going to go through good times and bad times, because I know it's going to produce, you know, just a healthy marriage. And in the same way, so you got to have that tenacity, which really boils down to your calling. You know, I've known I was called here in those rough times as well as the good times. And then the other piece is you got to have a relational fiber in you, because the economy in every church that I've worked in, and that's only five churches I've worked in, but small. You know, sample out of the 400,000 churches across the United States, but they're built on relationships. And when you read the Old and the New Testament, everything is relationally driven, and you've got to be able to take the time to build the relationships. I mean, at all of our smaller campuses, I'm just like, I don't ask them about their plan. I go, how many coffees did you have this week? How many breakfasts did you have this week? And how many lunches did you have this week? And if I don't hear the right number, I'm not going to be happy. Because I know that, unless you're spending time with the people, unless you smell like the sheep, you're not going to get it done. The best plan won't happen if you don't have, the laity, the volunteers that are making it happen. And the thousands, if you talk about all of our small group leaders, but the thousands of volunteers that are giving us time is because, of the relational aspect we spend in with them. So, those are a few. I could probably list about 30, but, those are some of the bedrock ones, along with recruiting. And, it just makes me think of it, I keep going on and on, but, relationships always lead into the recruiting, just like tenacity is foundational upon the calling.
Right. And Steve, the numbers, as we kind of list them, are staggering. 7,000 small groups. Saddleback has over 20,000 people that attend there every week. I don't even know how many staff, that you have right now, but I'm sure it's pretty large to be able to handle that many people. So a lot of our listeners are coming from much smaller churches and situations.
Sure.
And I hear that a lot in kind of when I go out and teach. They're like, how is this going to work? I don't have any staff. I barely have any volunteers. I'm just struggling to get, two groups started. So how can the system that you've developed at Saddleback, and I'm guessing since you've been there, it's been a large church, but how can it work in a smaller church where there's not the staff and the resources that you have every week?
Yeah, and actually I would say it's actually more fun. I actually miss the days of, of doing, a leader gathering when, you could know every leader and you could be with them, you could go around the tables. But again, at our smaller campuses, even the smaller campuses that maybe like 200, you're right. They don't have, these huge number of groups. But again, you want to get your systems right. And that's the main thing, because in a smaller church, it's not the number of groups you have, it is the health of the groups. And the beautiful thing about the smaller you are, the more relational you can be. I tell, our smaller campuses, I go, don't depend on our software system. I mean, it's great that we have it, but you need to know them personally. And part of what we do with our community leaders, and that's our infrastructure. Some churches may call them coaches or other terms. But, the beautiful thing is that your number one calling is to get to know their story and know their spouse's name, know their kids' names if they have them, know the birth dates, know the anniversary, know the dates that are important to them. So in a smaller church, you would do the same principles, but you just do it with a higher dose of relational capital, because the numbers are more grasp them quicker. But I would say from our smaller campuses to even smaller churches I work with, the beautiful thing is you still got to have training. I mean, all the basics that we go through in the front part of that book, you still got to have all of those in place, because they still need to be trained. They still need someone who can walk them through it. You still got to have an end in mind of what kind of disciple are you wanting to produce, and you got to have a pathway. So there's so many things that are just foundational, whether you have, one group or when you have, thousands of groups. Mm-hmm. And, people are always asking me, it's like, when, well, my church runs 50, why do I need small groups? And I go, I don't know about you, but I've got a one wife, which is nice, and two kids. And it's hard for me to keep track of their spiritual health. And so I can guarantee you, as a senior pastor, if you got a church of 50, you don't know the spiritual health of all those folks. And the only way you're going to know it is by empowering the laity to have every member of minister and, you know, working on health and helping people discover, you know, who they are. And that's the beautiful thing. If you want to have a healthy church, you've got to mobilize the entire church. And the only way you're going to be able to mobilize them is through how God designed it, with temple courts and house to house.
All right, natural follow-up question, and something that I can't imagine how many times you have done this. But what would you say to the brand new small group point person who has no idea where to start? What's the, you know, they come to you and they say, I don't know what I'm doing. What's the first thing I need to do after you say your last words to me?
Well, I mean, one of the first things I always tell, and a lot of times, ironically, I'm telling this to a senior pastor who calls me up and says, hey, I want to start small groups. And I go, great. I love that. Let me ask you a question. And, part of what you got to know is you've got to know, what are you trying to produce? You know, if you have the perfect disciple next to you, I would encourage that person, that volunteer who's running the small group engine, the house to house engine, to be able to connect with that senior leader and be able to say, if I've got the perfect disciple next to me, what do they need to be doing? Because that's what your groups have to produce. Now, at Saddleback, we take the five verbs out of the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, and we say those five verbs, those five action things that were told to us in the Great Commission and the Great Commandment, are what we want to see done in every person's life. And then when you know that, then you can build a small group ministry. Because unless you know that, you can't develop training, because your training's got to be building what your senior leader wants. You can't do tools, because you don't know what the tools are going to produce unless you know where you're going. You can't build a pathway for them. You can't build, you know, resources, even curriculum. You can't even choose curriculum if you don't know what you're trying to produce. So I use the adage, if I'm going to invite you over to my house and I just give you the city, you're going to say, you're crazy. I need everything. And if I go, well, here's the street, but I'm not going to give you the number of my house, then you're going to still like saying, if you want me to get to my intended destination, I need the full address. And churches so often leave it off with just the cute logo or the slogans that we have, and we have them too. But if you leave discipleship at the cute slogans, then you're not going to take it all the way home. And with that, I would tell the person that is just starting out, do not diminish your calling. When in Acts chapter 2, when the church was birthed, the front half was temple courts, you know, 3,000 people got saved. Immediately following that is house to house. And you have, you know, the house to house movement. And so in Acts 2, when the church was birthed, you see temple courts and house to house. I would tell that person, you have 50% of the engine of the discipleship making part of your church. Do not take that granted. Do not downplay your role. Don't make it another ministry, because when God designed the church, he designed it to operate at its maximum, optimum performance with temple courts and house to house. So you got to hold that with reverence, because God has placed you in that. You got to find out what you're trying to produce so that you can build a small group ministry that can make that happen throughout the church. And then you see people just, you know, I just can't tell you enough, when the church system is aligned, children, students, and adults. My family is a byproduct of it. My kids were born at Saddleback. They were raised at Saddleback. I mean, not literally, but they went through our whole church system. I didn't have to tell them to learn how to be to find your spiritual gift, because their life groups walked them through it. I didn't have to tell them the importance of evangelism, because their life groups helped them do it. So when your church system is fully orbed and in alignment, what happens is that every young family has a village around them that is amazing to help their kids become a follower of Christ the way you want them to be.
That's so good. And I want to I want to key in on something that I think is super important that you talked about is connecting with your senior leader. You said kind of knowing along with your senior leader where to go with your small groups is so important. And I found that. And I know that you've had that with your pastor, with Rick Warren, and you've kind of had that through the years. But what advice would you give to a point person that doesn't have that relationship with their senior pastor? I talk to a lot of, we do some things here at Lifeway where we bring in small group pastors. I never have a meeting with my pastor. You know, I don't have a relationship and I don't know where he's going. So what kind of advice would you give a point person to have that same level of relationship that you have with your pastor?
Well, in the show notes, I'll give you a podcast that will talk about that. But let me just sum it up like this. If you're in a relationship, you would be a fool not to find out the love language of your spouse, or if you're dating. I mean, anyone worth their salt and any parent with their salt is going to know the love language of their kids and know the love language of their spouse. And in the same way, you got to know the love language of your senior leader. I mean, they need to know that you're a friend, not a foe. And so the first thing I would just say is find out, you know, what drives them. When I first came on at Saddleback, my formal title was small groups pastor. But I know Rick loved the class system, and I know that he loved baptisms. And I would work really, really hard to make sure those two things were running perfect, because that's what, you know, he loved. And so there's a part where you can build a relationship with your senior leader without even having a meeting with them. I never had a meeting with Rick for the first number of years. And I mean, I'd see him periodically and things like that, but, you know, you don't sit down and, you know, talk about, you know, the strategic, you know, where you're moving and all that. But, you know, I just found out what they like. Most pastors love stories of life change because they're pouring their heart out on the weekend and preaching the best message they can. So you give them stories of life change and how that happens in group life or how that happened on the weekend. Almost every pastor loves stories. And I can't think of one that doesn't love stats, because, you know, they're all about evangelism, and, you know, they want to see stats. So stats and stories should be your bread and butter of, you know, helping build a relationship with your senior leader. Another thing is, you know, you may not know who your senior leader is, but you have a great opportunity to know the next degree out from them. And it's called the principle of the borrowed sword. You may not need to know the senior leader perfectly, but get to know the people that know him and that influence him. And, you know, you can, you know, build relationships with them to help do that. But everything is done relationally. But again, it's one of those things where you've got to be able to, you know, learn from them. And the beautiful thing about email is you can send them an email, or you can give them a note on the weekend and just say, hey, I just really appreciate you. And I think most senior leaders don't know that their staff loves them and appreciates them like I know they do in their hearts. They probably think, oh, they're too busy, they don't want to hear from me, stuff like that. But the bottom line is it's lonely at the top. And so you have a great opportunity to be their friend. And then also just, you know, it's important for all of us to understand that when God designed the church, he moves through a person, not a committee. I mean, I'm a groups person, but I know if the weekend isn't functioning, it's going to be a little bit harder to make my job work. And so we're a team, we're in this together. And so I'm there every weekend, not because I have a great role, but I want to be an encourager. I want to cheer my senior leader on and say, you know, I'm praying for you and you're a rock star. And, you know, and I walk the campus to make sure if there's anything that needs to happen for that experience to be the best it can be. It has nothing to do with my job, but it's because I care for the body. And when you care for the body, you work together as a team. And so building team is one of the best ways possible. And I definitely get it that you may not have that ability to go to your senior leader and just, you know, go to their house or do whatever you need to do. But there is the ability to build relationships in different ways, and you've got to concentrate on that and work on that.
So those of you that have met Steve, you know that there are a lot of wisdom in those words and in Steve's experience, and he's been proven in my relationship with him just more than willing to share all that he knows. And for those of you that haven't met him, then I would certainly encourage you to, if you have an opportunity to be at an event where Steve is, certainly with the book coming out, Planning Small Groups with Purpose. And you might want to, and I would encourage you to check out his first book, Leading Small Groups with Purpose, as well. You can follow Steve at Steve Gladen. That's Steve, common spelling, and then G-L-A-D-E-N. Steve, thanks for being with us again and for taking time. I know your days are packed, and if they're not, then somebody finds a way to put whatever needs to be on them to make them packed. So thank you for being with us. And, Chris, any additional thoughts?
I just want to say that first time I met Steve, he didn't know who I was, and he gave me his cell number. And I think that was probably a regrettable decision on his part. But that's just how open and just open-handed he is and the church is. I mean, it's just amazing.
Well, that's going to wrap it up.
Well, I mean, and then you're like going, everyone's listening going, you know, what's his cell number and all that? So 949-836-6052. If you call me, if you text me, remember I'm on Pacific Standard Time, so don't mess me up. Don't mess my sleep up.
That's going to wrap it up for episode 62 with Executive Pastor of Small Groups at Saddleback Church, Steve Gladen. Again, Steve, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your wisdom and your time. Please take a look at the book, Planning Small Groups with Purpose. We're real excited about that. And I'm sure there'll be some things in there that can help you in your small group ministry. On behalf of Chris Surratt, I'm Brian Daniel. Steve Gladen, thank you. And we look forward to being with you again for episode 63.